Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Alice Friedman. The larger framework of Alice's research is the fall of fossil-fueled Western civilization from dozens of factors, though oil being the master resource that makes all of this possible, especially heavy-duty truck, locomotive, and ship transportation dependence on oil, the main factor. She's the author of When Trucks Stop Running, Energy and the Future of Transportation. She's also the author of articles such as The Hydrogen Economy, Savior of Humanity, or An Economic Black Hole, and Peak Soil, Why Biofuels Destroy Ecosystems and Civilizations. Her website is energyskeptic.com. So first off, thank you for your work, and second, thank you for being on the program.
Oh, thank you.
So we hear in the news and we hear sort of bright greens talk all the time about how the economy is going to shift to 100% renewable energy. And there are some articles going around right now about how within 10 years, basically all vehicles will be electric powered too. And you and I both know that both of those are crap. So can you talk about how those are crap, and specifically sort of start with let's talk about trucks. I'll let you go. Talk about trucks.
Okay. First of all, to give people an understanding of why I focus on trucks in my book is I make the case that the number one priority of civilization is to keep them going. Although ships are dozens and rail four times as energy efficient, they don't go anywhere. The U.S. only has 25,000 miles of coast and navigable water. Rail only goes for 95,000 miles. But trucks have 4.1 million miles of roads. That's why over 80% of towns depend on trucks entirely. They don't have a port. They don't have rail. When trucks came along, they replaced millions of mules, horses, slaves, and hard labor. They opened up the entire nation to development, even totally unsustainable areas like Phoenix. It's hard to think of anything that wasn't on a truck or built with the materials they hauled. Buildings, homes, grocery stores, factories, and everything else inside of them got there because of trucks. Roads were constructed by trucks and built from asphalt and rebar trucks hauled in. The truck itself depended on mining trucks hauling billions of tons of ore to smelting factories. The food they're hauling was planted and harvested by trucks. I found three studies that looked at what would happen if trucks stopped running. They all agreed that on day one, grocery stores would run out of items they get several times a day, like eggs, milk, and bread. Many other businesses get several deliveries a day, like hospitals, pharmacies, and factories. By the end of day two, grocery store shelves would be emptying and gone by day three. Over the next few days, service stations would be out of fuel because they get deliveries 2 to 3 times a week. Restaurants and pharmacies will close, public transit decline, garbage pile up where there's a garbage pick every day. By the end of day three, ATMs will be out of cash. Most manufacturing and construction and mass transit will stop. Since milk can't be picked up, farmers will have to throw it out. Livestock will start to bellow from hunger as feed supplies end. Wastewater, sludge, and slime. Storage tanks will be full, and they can't be pumped out. On day four, food shortages begin. Ports stop loading and unloading vessels. Most people can't get to work. Buses and air traffic have stopped. Garbage is a sanitary problem because it's piling up at 685,000 tons a day. And if it was the time to plant or harvest crops, that ain't going to happen. And perishables are rotting wherever they are. And then you're going to have the electric system fail eventually because coal can't be delivered. And natural gas depends on electric pumping. The most important point of all to address the renewable power thing, is that it can't exist without trucks. So if the big plan is to transition to renewable wind power, how can that happen if you can't get the 8,000 wind turbine parts made all over the world to the turbine assembly factory? Wind and solar are utterly dependent on trucks from birth to death, from mining to supply chains to construction and delivery. A 2-megawatt wind turbine uses 900 tons of material. The wind may be free, but the turbine sure isn't. So for a 2-megawatt turbine, construction trucks spend 3 weeks excavating 2,000 tons of soil, set 50 tons of steel rebar into 50 tons of concrete, 500 tons, delivered by 50 concrete trucks to make the platform the turbine sits on. And then its blades weigh 40 tons. That takes 8 trucks. And to get half our electricity from wind, we need to build 1 million of these monsters, and they need to be replaced every 20 years. So I think I've made the case that trucks are important, the bedrock, really, of civilization.
So, you know, one of the first things you said was that, a lot of things are brought to us by trucks. And I am inside a house, and I'm looking, the gates are closed, so I can't see outside. And I literally cannot see a single thing that was not carried on a truck multiple times. The clothes in the closet were, you know, they were carried on trucks multiple times as they made their way from, you know, cotton in a field to the manufacturing plant to the retail store. The book right here, the computer, the lamp, all these things. Every one of these was on multiple trucks, and I haven't really thought of that in that way before.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, not just one truck. And then I want to mention the other half of trucks that are, well, two important points: that why is diesel used and hard to replace, but also all the other trucks I didn't mention that are equally, if not more, important. Like the tractor, they're off-road, the tractors, harvesters, cranes, construction, mining, and logging trucks, because they're equally a pillar of civilization. Trucks, whether they're on or off the road, run on diesel, because no other fuel comes close to the same energy density, and no other kind of engine or fuel has the power, durability, safety, or efficiency of diesel engines. Really big trucks have to use one because gasoline engines run so hot that they can only be 400 horsepower or less. And then you've got off-road trucks aren't anywhere near a gas station, so they need a really energy-dense fuel to go as long as they can. So, and you can't, yeah.
Can you define energy density for people, please?
Well, oil is about twice as energy dense as wood. And oil is, you know, 100 to 500 times more energy dense by weight or cube than batteries.
So basically, energy density is the amount of energy that can be held per unit of mass of the thing. So
that's right, or volume, yeah.
So lithium ion batteries, for example, and it doesn't matter what a megajoule is, but lithium-ion batteries can do 1 megajoule per kilogram. And gasoline, I just happened to be writing about this, which is why I know it. Gasoline is 46 megajoules per kilogram, which is why you can have a car that can go 1,000 miles. Or you can have a car that can go much farther with 100 pounds of gas than one that can go with 1,000 pounds of battery because of that energy density. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. The problem is you can't, the electric grid and steam boilers aren't portable. You can't bring them to the remote locations. And nor can diesel engines burn gasoline, ethanol, or dieselhol. A huge thing is that they need this density, energy density, because they need more power. They're working. They're not joyriding around on smooth roads. They have to move over rough terrain, often uphill, plus dig, dump, lift, haul, and push tons of dirt. Diesel engines are also super efficient, much more so, like 35% more than gasoline, and so they don't refuel as often. You know, if you tried to run them on natural gas, you'd have to bring three times as many trucks, and the gas tanks themselves would slow the truck down because they're very heavy.
Well, why,
I mean, you know.
let's really nail this down. Why can't they make a big a semi truck, a big freight hauler with lithium ion batteries?
Okay, well, that would let me talk about battery electric trucks. So if you wanted to, you know, a long-haul truck now running on diesel can go 600 miles carrying 60,000 pounds. But if you tried to run that truck with a battery, it would weigh 55,000 pounds. You could hardly carry any cargo, and it would probably take 12 hours to recharge it. It basically, the battery will weigh half as much as a truck. They're a whole different animal than a car. Batteries do not scale up from cars to trucks. It's laws of physics.
And so it's the same with those huge trucks that we see, like the huge dump trucks that we see at mines. It'd be the same thing where you'd have to, you know, 3/4 of the payload of the dump truck would be battery.
That's right. I mean, that's just not going to happen, you know. And one reason batteries are so inefficient is there's been almost no breakthroughs for 200 years. And, you know, Tesla just strung small ones together, and the weight of the battery pack to containing the batteries to control them so they don't explode or get too hot or cold, because that would shorten their lifespan, is half the weight. So any battery improvement has to overcome the extra weight of the battery management system, which makes it even harder for batteries to catch up. I mean, it doesn't look like chemically it's possible. It's just simply, it's a chemical box. It's not oil. It can't be as strong as oil. And every time you mess with it, maybe you make it more energy dense, but then it only cycles 200 times instead of 2,000 times. There's like at least 15 parameters that batteries need, and it's hard to mess with them because you probably undid something else, and you have to test all over. It takes years to develop a battery with about 20 kinds of scientists specializing in different areas. I mean, it's just, and it's probably physically impossible anyhow with trucks, no matter what you do.
So I think what you're saying is incredibly important, and I think people really need to hear this. So I want to go really, really slow. What you're saying is that there are physical reasons that trucks rely on diesel, that these huge trucks cannot be battery powered. And also, if we're going to have a so-called renewable, okay, that's one point. And the other point is that this entire way of life is completely dependent upon these massive diesel engines. Am I hearing what you're saying correctly?
Yeah, and pretty famous energy writer Vaclav Smil wrote a book making the case that the diesel engine was more important than computer chips in creating the world we live today. I'm not the only one who's realized that. I mean, people don't appreciate it. And they've been honed for 100 years exquisitely to burn diesel fuel efficiently. And that makes it hard for biodiesel to step in because it's made from plants, which is very chemically different from oil and has very different properties. Let alone the fact that even if you planted, you'd have to plant half of the United States in soybeans to scale it up, which is obviously impossible. And if you tried, you'd probably run out of water and other things too, because the whole system is so interdependent.
What about, we always hear too that hydrogen fuel cells are the way of the future. And can you talk about how those do or don't work for trucks?
Okay, well, first we should talk about hydrogen itself, because right away, that's a huge problem. It doesn't have any energy at all. So right away, you're losing energy. It's not, and just splitting hydrogen from oxygen is a non-starter. It's all made pretty much from natural gas, except for real specific scientific applications, because it's so much energy to do that. Methane's less reluctant to release the hydrogen from the carbon atoms. Now you finally got it. Well, you have to either liquefy it to -423 and then more energy to keep it that cold, or you have to compress it, more energy. And no matter what you do, hydrogen is the Houdini of elements. It's the smallest one, and it can escape through even microscopic imperfections. No matter how many seals and gaskets you have, if you don't use it, you lose it within a week. And then storing it is hugely problematic. You can't use existing tanks or pipelines because hydrogen wrecks metals. It embrittles, cracks, and fissures steel. So you have to build these very expensive, very thick steel containers to put it in. So then you can't use all the 160,000 service stations. And you'll need to deliver it to them in $250,000 each canister trucks. And it'll only have enough fuel for 60 cars. If that same tank were full of oil, you could provide oil for 800 cars. So that's another, energy density indication. And if the truck's burning hydrogen to get to the service station, then it's going to consume 20% of what it's hauling. Right now, fuel cells are so far from being developed, like wave devices and mining methane hydrates and a million other things that are touted as solutions. But right now, a hydrogen fuel cell truck would set you back $2 million. And they're only built because there's some pretty fat renewable energy subsidies out there. But then, how inefficient hydrogen was. Well, now turning it back into electricity is only 25% efficient, because you're losing energy every step of the way from getting the natural gas and liquefying it, reforming it on board, the fuel self-efficiency itself, the electric motor and drivetrain losses, and then just the aerodynamics and rolling resistance of the tires. So it's horribly inefficient. And they aren't rugged enough either. They can't handle the rough ride of a truck.
And there's another type of truck that's thrown out as being the savior of this culture, which is catenary trucks. And that one seems to me to make even less sense. Can you talk about what that is and what the so-called promise of it is, and then debunk it?
Yeah, well, I mean, people might think that, it would work. After all, I think there's 300 cities that have catenary buses and rail cars.
And that's basically a trolley system.
Yeah, it's a trolley system where you have overhead wires, and then the trolley bus or rail car itself has electric motors that connect to the electric wires through a pantograph. Not that, so, of course, we know we can make electric catenary trucks, though they'll need more power because they're twice as heavy typically. And in fact, the Port of Los Angeles is at the forefront of developing them, since they're so keen to find zero-emission vehicles to take cargo between the ports and inland distribution centers. But catenary systems are really expensive. They're $5 to $6 million a mile, and probably hundreds of millions more to build new power stations, substations, maintenance, and so on. The port also, sensibly, requires these catenary trucks to have another way to get around. Because it's just way, you know, it's too expensive to run the wires everywhere. So they have to get off the wires to pick up the cargo, and they have to get off the wires to deliver it. Plus, you want them to have another way to get around because the grid could go down or the truck ahead of them on the road could break down. Okay, but having two modes of fuel is hugely expensive. Like a diesel truck alone is $100,000, a used one $3,000. But a battery electric or catenary natural gas truck will cost three times more, and a hydrogen fuel cell truck 20 times more.
And there's another problem with the whole catenary thing too, that sure, vacuum tubes might work to send some piece of something from one place specifically to another, but that's not going to take, that's not going to deliver the mail, and it's not going to transport, you know, ground beef to McDonald's and transport diapers to Walmart. There's not going to be these wires set up on Highway 199 from Grants Pass to Crescent City. That's not going to happen.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, the port's only looking at 16,000 trucks out of a million trucks in California on only 26 miles of California's 175,000 miles of roads. And that would use 1% of our electricity, just those 16,000 trucks on 26 miles. I mean, imagine the electricity you'd need, you know, for the 4-point trucks on the other 4 million miles of road. And then we're back to those off-road trucks I like to talk about. How are you really, you're going to string overhead wires across 300 million acres of farmland and logging roads and area, you know, along high-power transmission lines to maintain them and so on? And I don't think the military is going to string wires over the Middle East to fight for the remaining oil. And we don't even know if it can be done because the existing trolley systems have a few hundred cars running 10 minutes apart. But here you're trying to run 16,000 catenary trucks that are running seconds apart. So, I mean, we don't know if it's even feasible. A lot of things don't scale up.
So, let's talk. Okay, I mean, what you're saying, I think, is incredibly important. And at the same time, it feels almost silly that we have to have this conversation, because everything you're saying seems so obvious when you put it out here. And, you know, we hear, but one reason I really wanted to interview you is because there are articles in the paper all the time, like every single day, there's a lot of articles about how, you know, Atlanta is going to go to 100% renewable energy. And it's all complete crap. For one thing, they're talking about 100% renewable. Well, renewable, we could talk about that word too. But they're so-called renewable. But they're talking about electricity. They're not talking about the transportation system at all, because that's a complete non-starter, as you're making very, very clear. But we hear these fantasies every day. And even if it were physically possible, which it's not, we don't have the money. I mean, I guess what I want to get to now is infrastructure decay that's already happening, because that's something else you've written about.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not going to just be, there's many reasons why trucks are going to stop, no matter if you like it or not. I mean, all of the infrastructure is eroding, corroding and rusting around us. It's hardly any of it's getting fixed. Roads only, like, good roads, like freeways only last 20 years. And the asphalt roads most of us are on are, you know, 10 years. And that's because they have, you know, Roman concrete still around, but, they didn't have rebar inside, which rusts and expands roads up to sevenfold and breaks the concrete up. You know, and everything we depend on, the oil pipelines, oil platforms, storage tanks, refineries, container ships, locomotives, trucks, cars, the grid, water, sewage, all of it is falling apart. We built it when you got, you could get 100 times more energy, than the barrel of oil you used. You could keep finding more oil. And it was cheap to find it and produce it. And, you know, you got these huge energy returns. And then the coup de grace is climate change. Because even if we stopped burning fossil fuels immediately, completely, the ocean is locked in to keep warming, and it's going to rise. And so the ports are going to be these little islands because the roads and the railroad tracks will be underwater. Of course, the vessels may well have rusted apart before sea levels rise. I mean, there's just a convergence of too many things to deal with. And then you've got crazy weather destroying roads and rail, hurricanes, droughts lowering electricity production because power plants need to be cooled. They use something like 40% of the water in the country to cool down. Of course, they don't consume it. It goes back to the river or ocean, but drought makes that a little harder to do. I mean, it's just... mind-boggling how much, how many things can go wrong with just the baked-in climate change effects.
So you've studied trucks for a long time, and can you? I mean, we both recognize that the crystal ball is always cloudy, but can you lay out scenarios with peak oil and climate change for? Well, let's back up a second. You know, it's a lot of people, myself included, have talked about the oil economy, and you would talk about the oil economy, but it sounds like also you're really emphasizing this is also a truck economy. And
yeah.
So can you talk about the decline of truck economy as you see it playing out? Once again, with the crystal ball is cloudy, so I'm not asking you to say that in 2019 there will be no trucks. I'm not asking you to do anything like that. I'm just asking you to sort of play out a scenario that you would think is realistic.
Okay, well, I think Nafis Ahmed wrote a great book about how many nations are already failing because of peak oil. Countries in the Middle East like Syria and elsewhere that used to produce oil, their populations quintupled, and if it didn't matter if they couldn't grow their own food or get their own water, they had the money to import it. But now severe droughts and other climate change have struck, and their oil has declined precipitously, and they don't have the money. That's why things are falling apart. You know, you can talk about politics being the cause. No, it's basic ecological disasters playing out, and what happens when you don't have oil money anymore to offset whatever's going on. So more and more countries are going to be in that position, including America, because our oil peaked in 1973, and, you know, we've managed to import a lot. But, like, the whole shale oil thing that's supposed to be a century of independence, well, that's been financed because middle-class people put their money into stock and mutual funds in their 401k and their IRA that have these oil and shale companies that are $385 billion in debt. and they should rightfully be out of business. But if you keep giving them money, then they'll keep drilling, and the banks don't mind because if they go out of business, they'll get nothing. It's not their money, and they'll get something from the oil that's produced. But that's a total sham. And many geologists have said it peaks in 2020, both natural gas and oil. I don't see how society can possibly cope with the rate of conventional oil decline. And we get 90% of our oil from conventional oil that just flows out of the ground. You know, Texas teas, like in the Beverly Hillbillies. Black gold, it just flows. And the remaining oil is nasty, gunky, distant, expensive, and it takes so much energy to get it and refine it that now that energy goes to that instead of the rest of society. The problem is that it wouldn't matter if there's 10 times as much unconventional as conventional. The problem is that the tap is going to stop flowing at the rate that can support 7.5 billion people. I mean, to bring it down to a small level, just imagine that you have a bathtub you can fill up in 10 minutes. Well, it will take hours in the future, and then eventually stop. And conventional oil will decline 9% a year by 2030. It's already declining at 6% a year on average. And society is like totally unprepared to cope with, imagine your salary is $50,000 and every year it goes down by $10,000. I mean, how long, maybe, well, you'd probably be fine, but most people aren't very self-sufficient. So, and then the whole financial system is a racket. Like, I think that the fact that we haven't been finding or producing more oil because it's so expensive and it takes 10 years. Hello?
No, go ahead.
It's obvious that there's going to be an oil shortage. And in the past 11 of 12 recessions, it's been because oil prices go so high that it crashes the financial system. And so you can see that energy is going to crash the system again because we can afford even less. Nope, Americans can't afford $150 a barrel. A lot of people say we can't afford more than $90, really. So, but then the financial system is so corrupt and it's so unreformed that I think it could just go down on its own.
So I want to go back to trucks. And again, what you're saying is so obvious. I want to emphasize this because, I mean, I want for listeners to look around the room they're in and imagine how many trucks were involved in bringing every single thing they see to where it is. And having taken a moment to do that, I don't know if this is where you want to go or not, but since diesel does have that 48 megajoules per kilogram, as opposed to lithium ion being 1 megajoule or less per kilogram, and what you said about the trucks would have to have 90% of it, the payload would be the battery. So why then do we keep... Two questions. One is, why then do we keep hearing that everything can be run on wind and solar? That just is so self-evidently nonsense. And second, given everything you're saying makes so much sense, why are we as a society not talking about this 24 hours a day?
Well, I have an article at Energy Skeptic about like at least 50 reasons why you're not. The big one is the German military did a study of what would happen if the public became aware that peak oil was real. And they found that the markets would crash, and then the financial system would crash. And so politicians now just want to keep the game going as long as possible. I think even newspapers feel the same way. It would be like shouting fire in a crowded room. And then no politician can get reelected if they have a glum message and tell people they need to drive fuel-efficient cars, which they ought to do, because every time the price of gas goes down, those CAFE standards are further and further from being reached. And I think we got as far as almost 26 miles a gallon during the high oil prices, and it's getting down towards 24 miles a gallon. So, you know, the politicians can't get reelected. They have to have a happy message, and there's no solution. Like when I was dealing with the San Francisco City Council, and they said, okay, so what do we do? And we're like, well, there's not really, well, there's things you can do, but they're not what the public wants to hear. So, you know, the main thing is we're going back to a civilization based on biomass like all previous civilizations. So, you know, for starters, you would try to do the things that would get you back there again. And that probably would mean relocating people from the coasts, which is where 80% of people live, to the interior, which is where 80% of the food is grown. Well, I mean, I'm still glad I escaped the Midwest. A lot of people aren't going to want to do that. And there's certainly, eventually 80% of us have to become farmers. And, you know, most people don't want to do that. So, you know, it's really hard to, it's just not going to be brought up by the politicians.
So basically what we're talking about is the same thing that I've talked about in all my work, which is that this way of life is not sustainable, and we will be living a different way, or we won't be living at all. And it would be nice, and nice is an understatement, if we were approaching this reasonably, and if we were actually facing the circumstances that we are in, and then acting reasonably under those circumstances. But instead,
well, obviously, yeah, the number one thing you could do is population, doing what you can for free birth control and abortion and education about the tragedy of the commons and why zero or one child per woman would be the patriotic thing to do. We're going the opposite way. They're trying to close, you know, the Republicans are trying to close, you know, abortion clinics and not pay for birth control. It's crazy. You know, that would be the one way to soften the hard landing. But, yeah, there's a lot of things that could be done, and I just don't see them. I see the opposite happening. It's as if, but I think that's because of the nature of capitalism. I mean, one reason economists and businessmen deny limits to growth is it makes their capitalistic exploitation of raping and pillaging the planet's resources invalid, because there's not, it can't keep going on. The United Nations came out with something recently about how, you know, 2 billion people are going to be here by 2050, and so we're going to need to triple our consumption of what we're already consuming. So if we did that at a rate of 5%, it would take less than 500 years to completely consume the planet, and we'll all be floating in space. I mean, this can't go on.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and if tomorrow you are made the queen of all things trucking and all things transition, what policies would you start to implement to try to make this transition away from an oil/truck economy to a muscle powered and current biomass economy? What would you do to make that as painless as possible, including especially to the natural world, because something we haven't talked about is that the planet's being murdered, you know, the sixth great extinction. And so what would you do if they suddenly put you in charge of policy? One thing you would do is you would make, you would give women absolute reproductive freedom.
Yep.
What else would you do?
Well, there, Richard Heinberg wrote a book called The Rimini Protocol based on Colin Campbell's oil depletion protocol, which is we really need time. And it's really hard to make a sudden change. So we need time. So they proposed that every year the governments plan to consume less oil than the depletion rate. So right away, I would put everyone on a certain amount of oil that they can use in their remaining lifetime. And if they need to sell it for money, fine. There's richer people that could buy it. But you have to do something, and that might not be the way to go, but you have to do something to ration. Because if you just make things more efficient, people just go more miles, for instance, with a car. And so now you haven't saved any fuel. Then I would just make the speed limit 55. And you could, if you didn't want to scare people, you could say, well, that's the biggest thing we could do for climate change. Because I think trucks burn half again as much fuel if they go over 55. I mean, the air resistance is a huge petroleum burner. So you would probably try to get people to move from the country to the city so you can concentrate goods and minimize the miles. But at the same time, you need to relocate people to the country to grow food. So someone has to work out how to do that. But if you can get people out of the country, maybe they won't cut all the forests down and kill all the animals to survive. This isn't my expertise, but that's, well, it is, I mean, I've thought a lot about it, but I feel like other people have done a really bang-up job of saying what you might be able to do. Like the Odoms wrote The Prosperous Way Down. Ted Trainer has a sustainability institute, and he's written several books. There's a lot of ideas floating out there. Obviously, a steady state economy. You know, we have to completely invent how we do business. But there's no time. We have to buy time.
Well, and I think another thing, as well as time, I think another thing that's really, really important, and this is one of the reasons I'm so grateful to you and your work, is that we have to have analysis. It's like a doctor friend of mine says, the first step toward proper treatment is correct diagnosis. And as long as people are fantasizing that they're going to have lithium-ion semi-trucks, then they're not, that's wasting time we don't have. And so,
yeah.
So I think, you know, if listeners take one thing away from this, it's that I want them to look at trucks differently and to look at the relationship between, I mean, and the truck economy is inherently unsustainable. There's nothing you can do. I mean, that is simply the case. And
yeah, because coal won't replace biofuels, and natural gas can't be used either to replace the oil for many reasons.
Well, I think that this, and you've made them very clear. So thank you so much, and I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Alice Friedman. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.